All right, Red Bill, day two in Disneyland. Anders, how are you, man?
Charles, I'm doing well. Thank
always
you.
Great to see you.
It's always a pleasure.
Awesome. So this is Channel 9 Live. You can tweet your questions to #CH9Live. You can ask Anders pretty much anything you want. But we'll start right off, Anders, by talking about your big session today. So tell me a little bit about what you talked about.
Well, two things, I would say. Our support for, I talked about C# 5.0 and VB 11.
Nice.
Which are the versions of C# and VB that are in the Visual Studio 11 preview.
Okay.
That we have handed out here at the conference. And, you know, the two big headliner features there is support for the Windows runtime.
Excellent.
And support for asynchronous programming.
Okay.
And then in the latter half of my talk, I talked about a project called Roslyn, which is, you know, our compiler as a service project, you know, the reimagining of of compilers into
Excellent.
Services that you can use in your own applications or to write your own refactorings, get a wonderful interactive prompt and fun interactive experience.
So, excellent. Yeah. So, and also one of the things that, you know, since this is sort of the Windows conference build and they talked about, you know, asynchrony is big time in the Windows runtime.
Like, it is.
Everything needs to
it
be
is.
Asynchronous.
Yeah, so, in fact, I think LS sort of summed it up really well in the keynote the first day. You know, their design principle was if an operation can take more than 50 milliseconds, then it should be asynchronous.
Yes.
And they've stuck to that in the design of all the new WinRT APIs. And I took a look, or someone on my team took a look, and I think out of the whole API surface, fully 10 to 15% of all the methods in there are asynchronous.
Wow.
Now, that may sound like not a lot, or it may sound, well, it's actually.
Yeah. That's a lot.
Quite a number of methods, and it turns out that, you know, it typically is the method that does the hard work, the grunt work, you know, where all the synchronous methods are the ones that sets up the properties or whatever, you know, and then, but then you call the do the I/O or do the computation, and that's asynchronous. So asynchronous programming is front and center on Windows 8, and luckily, our support for asynchronous programming is front and center in C# and VB as well.
Perfect. Now, what sort of does the way that you guys implemented async match up nicely with what the Windows runtime wants you to do? In other words, talk to me about how the interleavings work between them.
Well, so if you're just coding .NET Go, then your asynchronous methods will use task and task of T, which we introduced in .NET 4.0. And task is an object that represents an ongoing operation. You can ask the operation for its status, you can ask it for its result, or you can tell it, here's the callback that I'd like you to run when the task completes. So in the Windows runtime, we don't have task of T, because the Windows runtime is based on interface and so forth. But what we do have is an interface called iasync operation of T, which pretty much is the same as a task in that it's an object or an interface that represents an ongoing operation, and you can tell this interface where you would like to continue when the operation completes. And we basically bridge between task and iasync operation in the language. Indeed, the way we do it is actually the new await operator that we have that you can use in async methods is based on a pattern, just like link is based on patterns. You know, if you implement the right methods, then link comprehensions work. And it's the same for await. If you implement the right methods, if you implement the awaitable pattern, then you can use the await operator on your object. And we do implement that for task, and we do implement it for async operations. So we get a completely seamless async experience.
Excellent. Now, if I've written a bunch of code in the .NET 4 timeframe using your TCP with async await, and I built a nice library that does all these great things, and I want to take it over to the new world, how is that experience? Pretty seamless?
If you build it with what?
If I built it with sort of the 4.0 compiler and stuff like that.
That just works.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Love it.
Basic. Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
I really love the way it's all sort of coming together.
Yeah.
That's nice.
No, it is nice, and it's nice to see, you know. And it's interesting because the Windows runtime not only supports C# and VB, but it supports fantastic interop between C#, VB, and C++, JavaScript. I was just showing in my talk how you can write an asynchronous method in C#, and consume it in JavaScript as a JavaScript promise with a then method where you, and so, you know, I don't know that anyone else does anything that even comes close.
No
so
way.
It's pretty cool.
Now, what about for like C++? Is it as easy as well to go from the async model?
I think they're still working. I'm not sure what their final design is going to look like, but certainly they have, you know, like they support async operations. Probably not quite as simple as in C#, but usually isn't.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, I think there's like the standard async and stuff like that. Tweet questions to #CH9Live. We have Anders Heilsberg here. I'm very surprised Al hasn't shown up yet. I don't know. He must be sleeping or something, man. Now, I also know that you announced something small today about I think it's called caller info.
Ah, yes.
Can you talk about
caller
that?
Info attributes. Yeah, it's about solving a problem that people have asked us about on a regular basis, which is, could we please have file and line macros, or underbar file, underbar, and underbar line, underbar, which are provided in C++ and C compilers.
Okay.
To give you the current file name and the current line number. And it's useful for writing tracing, debugging, diagnostic macros and utilities.
Excellent.
And people have wanted that in C#, but of course in C# we don't have a macro processor, and that's very much by design.
Sure.
But what we do have now in C# 4.0, and therefore also in 5.0, mm-hmm. is optional parameters. And what we've done is we've added a set of new attributes that you can put on your optional parameters.
Mm.
So if, for example, you have a string file name optional parameter, mm-hmm. you can put a caller file name attribute on it. And then if you omit that parameter in a call to the method, then the compiler substitutes the current file name instead, or the current line number, or the name of the current member.
Nice.
And this gives you a really neat way of writing these sort of trace, diagnostic, debug utilities mm-hmm. that want to spew out, you know, file names, line numbers, or member names.
Sure.
And if you combine it with conditional compilation, you know, well, then you really have all of the functionality that you would have otherwise had to do macros for, you know, without doing macros.
Excellent.
Which I think is a good thing.
Very cool, man.
Yeah.
All right, we have our first question from John Liedergren. What do you think about code contracts in retrospect to... So I'm going to read what he says. So ask Anders what he thinks about code contracts in retrospect to his comment earlier to not have null reference value.
Right. So this is the ability that we don't have. One of the... If you look at... So let me frame the question here a little bit.
Yes.
We have two classes of types in C# or in .NET and VB. Reference types and value types.
Sure.
And reference types can always be null. You know, like strings and objects and whatever, they can always have a null value, where value types can never be null. Mm. And so if you imagine a quadrant with four boxes there, we have X's in two of them. Now, sometimes you want nullable value types, like a nullable int, whatever is super useful when you're representing a nullable column in a database, for example. So in, I think, C# 3.0, we added nullable value types with the question mark, type modifier, and nullable of T.
Okay.
And now you can have nullable value types. Now we've got three X's. But the X we don't have is non-nullable reference types, i.e. reference types that can't be null.
Okay.
And if I could rewind 11 years, you know, and buy myself a couple of extra months back then I would have sure liked to have that in the type system.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have that in the type system these days. And that means that, you know, you can't for a given parameter or given property or field say that this is of type string, but it's never null. And give me a compile time error if it somehow ends up possibly being null. And that would stamp out a whole bunch of bugs. If we could do that. The problem, though, is adding that to an existing type system where everything is nullable would be a massive breaking change. And that's sort of the dilemma we face. And code contracts is a thing that can help with this because, you know, you can sort of add it in a sideband of validation that validates whether things are null and then have tools that check it. And I'm certainly a fan of doing that, and that is part of what our code contracts work does.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in some sense, code contracts solve that problem. I mean, that's when you could just say if the if string equals null.
Well, they solve, but there's a limit to how deeply you can solve it, you know, because okay. they're still not deeply in the type system.
Sure.
And the type system is sort of the thing that really tracks how it all flows, you know. Mm. But they go a long way.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now, what does this mean sort of with in terms of interaction in this hybrid world we're living in now where you may be having a language on, say, Windows Runtime or something like that is allowed? Is that something that makes sense and how you would interact with that?
Well, so code contracts is a .NET only thing.
Got
so,
it.
So the Windows Runtime really... you know, is sort of restricted to interfaces and structs, you know,
okay.
and interfaces can't be null, and I don't think they're going to mess with
understood.
That. Understood. Yeah.
Very
yeah.
native at its core.
It is.
And the Windows Runtime is native. So we have another question being typed as I speak. What are the list of language features planned for C# 5.0 and VB11?
Uh-huh. Well, I think, you know, the two big headliners for C# 5.0 and VB11 is support for the Windows runtime.
Okay.
And they then support for asynchronous programming through asynchronous methods, you know, the async modifier and the await operator.
Okay.
Then we also have what we just talked about, this caller info attributes. And then in VB11, we have a new feature, iterators, which really is sort of a catch up to parity with C#.
Okay.
That because we promised, you know, that we're going to code all these languages, and that was one of the things that was missing from VB, so we've added that.
Excellent.
Yep.
And, of course, people, you know, we talked about Roslyn back in PTC10, and so people probably want to know when they can get their hands on it. So
In a month. Mid-October.
Wow.
Yep.
Right on.
Yep. So if you watch my talk online, you'll see me demo the CTP that we're going to release in 4 weeks.
Okay.
Yep.
And so give me a couple, give us a couple sort of scenarios where Roslyn really shines.
Sure. So the way I talk about Roslyn typically is, you know, like a before and after. You know, if you look at compilers traditionally, they have really sort of been black boxes. You know, in one side you feed source files, and then out the other end come object files or assemblies or exes or whatever, and magic happens in the middle. You know, like the compiler parses your stuff, builds up a whole wealth of semantic and syntactic information about your code, and then it produces the object files and exes, and then it promptly forgets everything. And all of that knowledge, it turns out, you know, and that used to be fine when we were just doing command line compilers, right? But today we are, you couldn't live as a programmer without statement completion, refactoring, find all references, go to definition, rename, you name it, all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. All of that stuff is powered by deep semantic understanding of the code.
Sure.
And that semantic understanding comes from a compiler. You know, so there's actually built into VS today, well, we have a version of our old compiler that has sort of where we sort of like gone in and hooked information there so we can use it in refactorings. But we've never put a lot of deep thinking about how to surface that to the community.
Sure.
And that's what we're doing with Roslyn. So we're building two new compilers, C# compiler built in C#, VB compiler built in VB.
So you are building it in C#.
We are.
Okay.
And then we're building a shared language service that uses these compilers as APIs.
Okay.
And those APIs we use to build like all of this stuff I just outlined and a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And now I lost my train of thought.
That's fine. But no, I mean, it sounds like, I mean, Roslyn really is going to enable a whole new class of...
What I was going to say was, we actually dog food all of these APIs ourselves in building our language service then,
sure.
you know, to build our refactorings and whatever. So we're building all of our stuff out of that, but we're also going to make all of these APIs available to the community. So programmers out there themselves can build their own refactorings or use the C# or VB compiler in their domain-specific language to have little snippets of code sitting in there.
Nice.
Or create their own interactive experiences, you know, like a bunch of interesting things. And if you see my talk, you'll see some of the cool things we're doing in the Roslyn CTP, for example. We have a C# interactive prompt that's built out of this stuff that allows you to just sit there and type code, you know, like it's a dynamic programming language, except power of static typing. You get statement completion. You even get refactoring in the interactive prompt.
Nice.
You know, which is... That's super I don't think anyone's cool. ever done that.
No, know? That's
so it's really nice.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
So we got a lot of questions coming in. Can we scroll back up? I saw one question up there that's been asked that's no longer there. So we'll go to the Iron Arch question. Thanks. I remember him from yesterday. Java 8 is going to convert lambdas to SAM types. Why has C-sharp gone for delegates instead? What are the advantages and disadvantages?
I'm not sure what SAM types are, but I do know that there was a blog post, I think, from one of the Java language architects recently that they've decided to go with the C-sharp syntax for their lambdas in Java, which, you know, I think that's a good thing.
Yes.
So the fat arrow and, you know, x arrow, x plus 1 is how you write a lambda. Mm. And that is going to be how you write a lambda in Java. And I think it's great. I mean, that's a nice way of doing it. I believe that in Java, lambdas compile down to interfaces with a single method.
Okay.
Where we use delegates, which is, you could think of as delegate as an interface with a single method, if you will. One of the things that differ is that with a delegate, if you have a delegate with a certain signature and you have a method with a matching signature, you can just wire the two together. With an interface, if you have a method with a certain signature and you have an interface with a single method with that signature, you can't just wire them together.
I see.
Because that method may sit in a class that doesn't implement that interface, and so you have to have an adapter.
Ah.
And so the Java approach often ends up needing more adapters than we need with delegates, you know.
Okay.
And so that's sort of one of the cons, at least. But, you know, I mean, it's they're not a huge difference there. The important thing is supporting Lambda.
Absolutely.
Which, I'll point out, we have been doing for, 6 years now?
You know it. And, of course, C++ supports Lambdas now as well.
They do, too. Yeah.
So
yeah,
Lambdas rock, man.
Functional programming, man.
It's, rock and roll.
Yeah.
All right. So we have another question. Mike P-Tweet asks, how much of the async dynamic stuff in C-sharp was inspired by JavaScript-style programming?
So async and dynamic. Certainly the dynamic stuff, which we did in C-sharp 4.0, was definitely inspired by JavaScript, which at heart is a dynamic. Inspired by other dynamic programming languages like Python and Ruby and whatever. Async, not as much. I would say that, you know, well, one thing that we certainly observed was that JavaScript presents a pure async programming model, you know, because JavaScript code runs on the same thread that the browser's UI runs on.
Sure.
And you simply cannot, in JavaScript, allow there to be blocking operations because you'd frost over your browser if you did. Mm. And so all operations that potentially have latency in JavaScript are asynchronous.
Okay.
And, of course, you know, that has sort of spread. Silverlight has a purely asynchronous programming model, too, because it has to coexist well in a browser, all of Windows runtime. Mm. So that's all, you know, part of the inspiration. I would say, too, that F-sharp, you know, has been an inspiration, just like it was an inspiration on a lot of the functional programming stuff that we did. You know, F-sharp had async workflows before. We had async methods. The two are different, you know, in how we did it. But, you know, the notion of having the ability to execute or to orchestrate execution of asynchronous code using normal flow of control constructs is really at the core the same. And I think that's really important. So I would say more than JavaScript, I'd say F-sharp was probably an inspiration.
Yeah. Cool. So just everybody keep tweeting questions to hashtag CH9Live. And we have the great Anders Heilsberg here. We'll now move to a question from Britt Vich. Link fix the impedance mismatch of SQL. Okay. Do you foresee something that will fix the impedance mismatch of XAML for UIs?
There's an impedance mismatch? I mean, XAML is just an XML-based markup for object instantiation scripts. I actually feel that we have very good match between what you express in XAML and what you express in your C-sharp code or VB code that uses the XAML. Mm-hmm. For example, all of the tag names in XAML are class names in the language, and all of the property names or attribute names are property names in the language. So if you see some XAML that goes, you know, button name equals whatever. Well, that's exactly the same as newing up a button and setting the name property to. So I do feel like there's a pretty good match. So I'm not sure exactly.
Yeah, I don't see the correlation.
What's being asked there?
Well, in some sense, with link, you did the and this is the way you sort of phrased the link thing, which was initially for general purpose developers dealing with the data world. I had to go to a different mindset, a different tool.
Right.
So with link, you brought it closer to the way that I like to express my thinking.
Yeah.
And so I guess what he's asking is, you know, is there a similar thing? So if I'm a developer and I like to write code, XAML's not code. I mean, we could have that argument. You know, maybe it is code. It's markup. It's
declarative code, you know.
Declarative code.
But it really is. I mean, if you look at it, I mean, you literally can go straight from XAML mechanically to the equivalent code.
As you said. So there is no impedance mismatch. That's the answer. Right on.
Yeah.
So we have another question. This is from Anku Aran. How easy is it to port existing Silverlight code to WinRT? Does WinRT support composite app frameworks like MEF?
So how easy it is? Well, I think it was Antoine who demoed.
Yeah,
keynote.
Yeah, right, Antoine.
Starting with a Silverlight app and just literally adding some conditional compilation that just changed the namespaces.
Yep.
And poof, ran as WinRT. So I'd say it's easy to go between the two.
Right on.
There's a high degree of impedance match.
Nice. That's your new one. And what about the MEF part, the support?
I'm not sure what it does. I don't think so. But I'm actually, I'm going to have to owe you an answer there. But
that's cool.
You know, it'd be easy to find out, you know, and just
right on.
With the,
well, we have your name. We keep your questions. So we'll hopefully we can reach you online. The next question, Anders, what can you tell us about Project Red Hawk? What's the rationale behind it? Any more functional things coming to C#?
I can't really tell you anything about
it. I've never heard of it.
No. So, it's not.
Where did you hear of it, man? All right, we'll continue on. But thanks for asking questions.
Sure.
And keep tweeting them to #CH9Live. We have Anders Heilsberg here. I would imagine many of you are C# developers. This is the person you need to ask questions to. We got an Eric Meyer question now that I said that. But all right, so Philly PJ, will reactive extensions get included with future versions of .NET? How about some cool tooling debugging support? So two very different questions.
Yeah. Reactive extensions, possibly. I don't know that we've decided one way or the other what we're going to do there. So the tooling debugging support is for reactive extensions, is it?
Well, I think you already talked about some really cool new tooling.
I mean, I will let just for people who don't know what the reactive extensions or the RX framework is, it's a way of writing event-based stream processing logic using link syntax and link comprehensions. So where link, you know, ordinarily operates over data. In this particular, with RX, these operators operate over streams of events, if you will, and it's a fascinating way of thinking about coding. Mm-hmm. Although personally, I've found that the stuff we've done with async allows you to do a lot of the event-based stuff. RX allows you to do a bunch of stream-based stuff that we can't do with async. But I'm always a great fan of embracing a new kind of programming without introducing a new style or language, if you will. You know, in a sense, when you write stuff with RX, you know, you have to sort of, you don't get to write a for loop or whatever. You have to turn it into something else. So you have to understand this mapping, you know. And that's kind of what's been hard also about writing asynchronous code with callbacks is that it sort of like turns your code upside down and changes the you don't get the normal flow of logic that you have with normal statements and flow of control that you always use for programming. And the thing that I love about our async stuff is that you get to just program exactly the same way, but your code can now execute in an asynchronous manner.
Sure.
And that's just tremendously valuable because there's just something in our minds that, you know, you see a body of code with a while loop and whatever, and you just go, oh, I know what this is going to do. But if you try to see that written into callbacks with a lambda that's parallel, and it's like all upside down, and
sure.
you just can't tell what the code does, and so you can't see the forest for the trees. And
okay.
So yeah.
But I mean, you made a really good point though, in the sense that Rx is really for, like you said, linked to events. I mean, that's really
right.
what it is, right?
Right.
And it's really useful for. For example, you could imagine something on the server where you're dealing with massive amounts of
oh, yeah.
stream
yeah.
information coming in. And again, it's a library implemented in C#.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's readily available. Let's move to another question. This one comes from the same person as, well, I guess we have about three or four people asking questions. So we'll go to another one. Okay, we'll go to the bottom one. Will compiler as a service be able to embed a state machine from C# source for, say, building Lexer parsers like Boost of Spirit?
Well, it's not going to be able to directly do it, but it's certainly something that you yourself could do with it.
Okay.
It's my hope that we can share as much of the Roslyn project with the community as it is at all possible. You know, for sure we'll share the APIs. I'd love to share the source as well, you know, so people can do their own things with it, you know,
okay.
and understand how the compiler works and build extensions to it and experiment with new stuff in the language. You know, the more people
sure.
are doing that, the better we're all going to do, you know,
absolutely.
As a community.
So now, yeah. why couldn't you embed a state machine, like he was saying in his question? Like, what's the challenge with?
Well, I'm not quite sure what kind of state machine he's talking about
okay.
here, whether it's a parsing state machine or plus this screen is going up and down. So I can't really
building Lexer parsers like Boost of Spirit. Of course, that Boost is the C++ library. That's pretty rock and roll.
Okay, so I think he's talking about, yeah, like a library okay. that creates parsers, which is not what compiler as a service is,
sure.
is about. No.
But that's a great question. Thanks
yeah,
for asking
yeah.
it, man. Any chance in the future to have only one language for client and server like C# and remove JavaScript like Google is doing with Dart?
Well,
is it Dart or is it Tart? I guess it's Dart.
It's Dart dash. Who okay. knows what it is? We'll find out.
You know, Gilad Brock is working on that.
I saw that. Yep.
Wow.
Yep, they're going to talk about it in a month.
All right.
And I'm curious to see what they have to say. I don't know that anyone's going to remove JavaScript, quite honestly. It's which is what I find sort of surprising about that
yeah.
that whole effort. JavaScript is, I mean, I have a hard time pointing at anything that's more successful these days than mm-hmm. JavaScript. Yes, JavaScript has problems. Yes, they need to be fixed.
Sure.
But, you know, I wouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater necessarily.
Agreed.
I would point that, you know, one of the interesting tools that's out there for running C# code in the browser is it's a project called ScriptSharp. It's done by Nikhil Kotari
yep.
At Microsoft that basically allows you to write C# code and have it cross-compiled to JavaScript. And
mm-hmm.
it's a tool that we use in-house a lot
yeah.
for a lot of our properties. And it's pretty cool. So that's mm-hmm. one way that you could use the same language on client server.
Totally.
Yeah.
But, I mean, let me ask you that. That's actually a really good point, because one of the things that we've learned about at this event, I think it's been made rather explicit,
yeah.
is that it's a hybrid world.
It is.
I mean, in the Windows runtime, I can write C#. I can take C# stuff that I've written, mix it with JavaScript, do some hardcore computation in C++, all very seamlessly.
Yeah.
And so this notion of one tool to rule them all, that's really not important, is it?
Well, if history is any guide, you know, no one tool rules them all,
yeah,
right? I
sure.
mean, it just isn't it's just not the way it works.
Yes.
And I would sort of point out that each language and each runtime, if you will, is very much a function of the environment in which it grew up. JavaScript has like this deep, deep synergy with the mm-hmm. browser that is very, very, very hard to replicate in anything else.
Yeah.
Right? And then the two like grew up together.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, C# has a deep, deep affinity with, you know, Windows, .NET, you know, and is a function of that ecosystem.
Yes.
And that brings some advantages in both camps. And you try to put one of them in the other's place, and it feels like a bit like a fish out of water.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And so now you can spend all your time trying to add water or fishiness or whatever, you know, but I'm not sure that that's the best use, you know. Of your time.
Absolutely. Absolutely correct, yeah. man. All right, S.J. Woods. Where is the DLR now?
It's
on WinRT, will C++, JS now be brothers, sisters of C#, VB? i.e. feature match across all languages?
Well, that I can pretty much guarantee.
I,
you know, those languages are so different, which is why we're supporting them, right?
Yes.
I mean, JavaScript is a dynamic language. C++ is like at the very extreme other end of the spectrum, and there is no way, categorically, that they will ever all have the same features.
Sure.
That's just not going to happen. They're way too different. But I will point out, and as we talked about a little bit earlier, you know, that the WinRT is a fantastic conduit for interop between these very different languages.
Mm.
You know, and it's pretty remarkable how far WinRT has been able to push, you know, the boundary there on what you can do. Like I said, I demonstrated writing an async method in C# and consuming it in JavaScript.
Amazing.
In a very, very native manner. And that could have been written in C++ or consumed. I mean, it's like from anywhere to anywhere, you know. So
that's awesome.
So, yeah.
And gone are the days of NoPIA and PInvoke.
That's
and all
right.
That
that's right. That's right.
Right on. So let's get to these questions. Thanks for asking, everybody. Keep on asking to #CH9Live. Anders Halsberg, of course. Anders, do you plan on any language level help to make iNotify property chains easier? You know, I remember this question was asked when I interviewed you.
It's asked every time.
Why don't you just do it, man?
So in my talk, in my talk today, I showed a refactoring that implements iNotify property. You just select a group of properties, refactor, poof, it implements it for you.
Excellent.
We're going to be shipping source code for that as part of the Roslyn CTP. Now, that's not a language level solution. That's a refactoring solution. But that's a big step along the way.
Okay.
I would like to ultimately have a solution for it in the language.
Mm-hmm.
But I also want it to be general purpose enough that we're not just hardwiring iNotify property into the language. There's something that feels wrong about that.
Sure.
You know? But so we're thinking about it still. But I'd say we at least made some progress on that problem with this Roslyn CTP.
Perfect. So there you go. C# is lacking a full-featured enum. What do you think?
Well, I don't know what a full-featured enum necessarily is. I mean, so certainly our enums in C# are different than, for example, Java's enums, mm-hmm. where we represent enums as integer values. Java uses singleton objects to represent the enum values. And you know, there are pros and cons on these approaches. We're probably a little more aligned with like the C++ view of what enums are.
Sure.
But I wouldn't say that one is more full-featured than the other. I think, you know, they have their pros and cons. I'm reasonably happy with where we're at with our enums. I'm certainly not planning to change them.
Cool. Yeah. This is a good question because it's a confusion that we need to just blow up.
Yeah.
So, I am totally confused now. C# VB on Win8 works on CLR or WinRT?
Both.
Rock and roll.
So, but let me expand on that.
Thank you.
Bit. So, the WinRT basically sits below all of it. You could sort of look at a diagram that goes OS kernel, and there's WinRT and Win32, and they're sort of siblings. You know, they basically implement the OS functionality. It's done in different ways. Win32 is, you know, traditional DLL entry points that you can get at with PInvoke and somewhat painful. WinRT moves it to a higher level, but it's an OS level API implemented in native code. But WinRT APIs have a lot more metadata describing them and are more directly importable into languages.
Excellent.
Now, on top of that, you then have different language stacks. There's C++ native that just consumes them directly. Then there's JavaScript, which has a VM that exposes these WinRT APIs as JavaScript objects. And then there's the CLR that can expose them as .NET, the equivalent of .NET objects. You can't tell, honestly. They're namespaced. They're like, I mean, they feel like they have constructors, static methods. They feel just like .NET objects.
Mm.
But the CLR is in there bridging, if you will, into the garbage collected world, you know, which WinRT is not garbage collected, at least not in the same way. It's ref counted.
Sure.
It's an evolution of COM.
Yes.
Really. With, you know, registry-less activation of objects, namespacing of the metadata.
Mm-hmm.
GUIDs have largely gone away. You know, like, we basically just, like, fixed all of those issues.
It's beautiful,
And that makes for a much better interoperability story. But definitely on Windows 8, there's still a CLR, you know, just like there's a Java VM, you know, and that is part of the managed language bucket.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I think, and I've seen that kind of confusion before. I mean, Windows runtime isn't really a runtime in the same sense as a virtual machine.
Right.
So
correct.
It's an application binary interface layer, as
yes.
you just said.
Yes.
So please keep that in mind. Could abstract data types plus compiler as a service equal code gen? So abstract data types
plus compiler as a service equal code. Yes, I would think so, but I'm not quite sure what is meant by that. Certainly, the Roslyn APIs aren't just about understanding code. They're also about generating code. Just like you can say, here's a piece of C#, please parse it and give me a syntax tree, and then from that syntax tree you can say, now please bind it and give me semantic information so I can understand what these symbols in here refer to and so forth. But you could also go the other way. You can new up a syntax tree, and then you can make code out of it simply by calling toString. Poof, code comes out.
Nice.
You know. Now, you can even, there are even formatting services in there where you just new up the syntax tree and then you just say, now give it to me nicely formatted, and out comes source code that's nicely formatted according to your current formatting settings and so forth. So there are all sorts of services in there. The same kind of services that we use when you say format selection in the editor, for example.
Sure.
Yep, same thing. That's an API now. You know.
Okay.
Every little piece of functionality in there, you know, basically ends up being an API that is available for anyone to use.
Now, speaking of JavaScript, could I use compiler as a service to take C# and generate JavaScript?
No. Well, not directly.
Okay.
However, you could take C# and you could get a syntax tree with semantic information.
Okay.
And from that, you could much more easily write a JavaScript code generator if that is what you want to do.
Yes.
It's not just going to happen automatically,
and
you would have to put some work into it,
but
it's a lot less work than if you first have to write a complete C# parser yourself. Right?
Absolutely.
I mean, that would have been.
So that's actually a cool point. I get to leverage the power of the parser, and then I can do my own creative.
And not just the parser, also, and I think this is important. Parser just gives you a nice syntax tree where you can sort of tell where the commas and the comments and the identifiers and the keywords are, but we also give you the ability to get semantic information, like in the syntax tree, I see var x equals foo.bar of 10, 20.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what is the type of x?
Okay.
Now, I might need to know that if I'm going to generate some code or do some refactoring, right? Well, you get to ask these questions using the semantic APIs that we have.
Okay.
And that requires creating symbols, binding them, loading metadata, whatever, and all of those services are also in there. So you can ask much, much deeper questions. And that's really, at the core of it, what powers all these intelligent refactorings. You know, that's what makes us able to tell the difference between this X over here and this X over there. You know,
nice.
This might be a local variable here, this is a local variable there. Let's not confuse the two when we do a global rename. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You need that kind of info.
Rock and roll. So we only got a couple of minutes left. Right. So now we got to go to the most important questions. Can C# desktop apps use WinRT UI.xaml namespaces? So in other words,
right.
I've seen that question come up a lot.
Yeah, no, they cannot.
Okay, no, the answer is no. So can CLR apps be hosted in a Metro app shell to have full screen experience? Where's the question? Okay, no deep integration, nor charm. So the question is, I guess, you have an existing app and you want to run it in full screen mode. I don't know what the question is. Let's move on to the next one. Does the Roslyn, more Roslyn questions. Does the Roslyn immediate window support link query expressions?
It doesn't in the build that I demoed today.
Mm-hmm.
It will in the one that we are CTPing in mid-October.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. So we have time for one more question, and it's going to be, any plans or suggestions for developers unable to attend build? That's the last question you want to ask Anders Hausberg, man? All right. So how can we test touch-centric Win8 apps?
Oh, download Windows 8 and install it on your touch PC, and there it is.
Right on.
I mean, it's out there. Yeah.
Well, hey, thank you so much for coming on.
It's always fun.
Always great to see you.
Good to see you.